This is Henry Banks of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. On the show today, my guests are members of Witness for Peace Midwest. Katie Marks, Tasha Tart, and Professor Carol Wallace join me in the studio to talk about their recent trip to the Honduras. They discuss the people, the region, and the impact the trip made on them individually and collectively. They also join me to talk about an upcoming fundraiser called Sweet Justice. All of this and more on People of Color after this news. Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for joining us tonight. I am very honored and delighted to have in the studio with me Katie Marks, Tasha Tart, and Carol Wallace. They are all a part of a recent trip to the Honduras, and they're here to talk about that trip, what it meant to them, but also talk a little bit about Witness for Peace and the organization itself and what Witness for Peace does globally. So welcome to People of Color. Thank you for being here today. Why don't we start tonight having you, Katie, introduce yourself. If there's something you want to share with our listeners about yourself that I didn't mention, please feel free to do that. And then after, Katie, we'll go right to Tasha.
Great. Well, thanks for having us. We're especially excited to be able to share our experience and talk a little bit about Witness for Peace because it is such a great organization. As you said, I'm Katie Marks. I'm a senior at UMD going for Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. I'll be graduating this December with that degree and also a philosophy major. So that's just a little bit about me.
You got an exciting future, right?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
That's great.
We'll see where it takes me.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Also, again, thanks for having us. We're really excited to be here. To share a little bit more about myself, I'm also a senior at UMD. I also major in women, gender, and sexuality studies. I also have a science major as well, but that's less important in this setting. So, yeah, Witness for Peace is a great organization, and we had a great time traveling to Honduras and seeing what it was like to be there. So we're excited to share that with you guys.
All right. Carol?
Hi, I'm Carol Wallace. I teach Spanish at UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth, and I've been aware of Witness for Peace for a long time and really wanted to go on a delegation. They work in several different Latin American countries and have since the 1980s. And when it came to the spring and I saw this delegation in Honduras, I was really interested in it because Honduras is suffering some real crises since the coup that happened in 2009. And so I really wanted to learn more about how that was affecting and also look at how some of the issues that they're dealing with are similar to some of the issues that are going on in our own country and other places in the world.
Absolutely. Again, thank you all for being here. Carol, I have to ask you a quick question. So I'm wondering if you know a very dear friend of mine by the name of Milan Kovacevic. He teaches French at UMD.
Yes,
I know
Milan.
Do you know him? Okay. All right. We've been friends for like 25 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's my connection with UMD. So thank you.
Yeah, he's part of our great department.
Absolutely. So why don't we go into our conversation right now? And I want you to just talk a little bit about Witness for Peace as an organization. Tell our listeners what Witness for Peace does globally, especially, since there's so many needs all over the world. What does Witness for Peace do? How do they get the delegations put together or established? And why do they go to all these countries all over the world?
Mm-hmm. Witness for Peace started originally in Nicaragua in the 1980s, during the time that there were wars going on throughout Central America, and so their focus is still Latin America, and the primary countries that they work in that I'm aware of are Nicaragua, Colombia, Cuba, Honduras, Mexico. Mm-hmm. I think those are the primary countries that they're active right now, and they're. It's basically is a group working in solidarity with the people of the regions where they work. They have staff people who live on the ground and coordinate on a regular basis with the groups that are working in all kinds of issues and that have to do with human rights, that have to do with environmental rights, that have to do with indigenous rights, and various other kinds that have to do with women's rights. And so they work with those groups to try to find support. And the main goal of Witness for Peace is to see the ways in which U.S. policy affects the things that are in Latin America and brings delegations there to learn about those things so that we can come back to the U.S. and share with our leaders, with our fellow citizens, what's going on there and how the things that happen in our own country are affecting them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I heard you, Carol, earlier say that some of the things that are happening in, for example, Honduras, which is what you're here to talk about specifically, some of the things are similar to what's going on in the United States in many ways. So why don't we go ahead and start that part of the conversation? You went to the Honduras. What was it like for you when you got there? Was there abject poverty? What were some of the things you experienced that you didn't necessarily expect to experience? Anyone?
Well, I can start a little bit with that. So kind of on the opposite end, I think I came into this delegation thinking that we were going to be doing something that it ended up not being at all what I was thinking. And I was thinking more of the opposite, like we were going to be going to a country where it was just run down and blah, blah, blah. And it's not that it's not, but it's a totally different thing when you're there. And some of the things we saw that are parallel to the things in the United States, I mean, the indigenous struggle it's insanely parallel. Like the struggle for land rights and water rights, you know, water is life and just access to clean water and whatnot. That's completely similar to, you know, Standing Rock and other indigenous struggles here in America. And then outside of that, or connected with it, I mean, women's rights and things like that. And you can see the ways in which the struggle is there and similar to ours in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
I think women's rights especially was apparent to us, all of us, but being women's rights majors from UMD, being especially aware of that struggle and seeing what it was like for them, but much harder because they have this intersectionality of, you know, color, gender, class. So that was especially hard to see, but seeing how strong the women were there was, and I do want to say inspiring, because it really was. It was very emotional to see how much they overcome and how they continue to fight despite their government and their lack of rights and their lack of availability to anything was, you know, shocking to see firsthand. So that for me was really amazing, and I think I came away with that being the most inspiring concept that I saw.
So. Absolutely. Carol, for you, what was it like once you got there?
Yeah. I've taught about Latin America for many years. I started studying it as a college student back in the 1980s when the Central American Solidarity Movement was going on, which is one of the things that got me into studying Spanish in the first place. And so having taught and read and seen many movies and things, I expected to be informed. I expected to be moved. But I didn't expect the degree to which it was going to affect me to really be there talking to these people who are involved in these struggles on a day-to-day basis, listening to them say outright that they understood that they were literally putting their lives on the line for the struggles that they were involved in, whether it was struggling against resorts on the coasts or hydroelectric projects on the rivers or fighting against the violence of the government and the paramilitaries and things like that. And being there, here, visiting one of the places where people were tortured in the 1980s, and with the families of people who were disappeared and put through this, right there with us, and hearing these things, even though it was all things I knew intellectually before, I did not expect the emotional impact that it was going to have on me, and it really did. And just when they were talking about the things that people have gone through, and the and just hearing people say, yes, I know I'm putting my life on the line, and I'm willing to do that. I'm honored to be able to do that, even were even told.
Absolutely.
And it was very impressive.
I'm here with Katie Marks, Tasha Tart, and Carol Wallace. They recently went to the Honduras. They're here sharing their stories, their advice to people who would be considering going on the next delegation with Witness for Peace. Again, I'm so grateful that you're here today. But Carol, I want to ask you a specific question. Do you believe the struggles that the folks in the Honduras are experiencing are similar to the civil rights movement of the 60s in the United States?
Anytime people are gathering together to struggle for their rights at whatever level, whether it's their right to determine their own reproduction, whether it's their right to determine what happens to their land and the rivers, whether it's the right to know what's happened to people that they care about, all of those kinds of things, I think, are very much related. And one of the things that always impresses me in Latin America in general is how much they know about U.S. history, far more than people in this country know about the history of any of these countries. And so they were very aware of things like Standing Rock, and they talked with us about things about those things. They were very aware of some of the struggles over the Black Lives Matter and some of those kinds of things. And so, yes, they see the similarities, and we definitely see the similarities between when it comes to how do you fight for the rights of everybody? How do you fight to make everybody's voice heard in a government that is really a dictatorship? How do you speak out in places where you know it's a risk to actually say those things?
And I know we've been talking about water. They're dealing with water issues in the Honduras. We're dealing with water issues here in this country. The reason I bring up water, because back in the 60s, this country used water as a means to spread hate with the water hoses to push people back, to try to discourage them from fighting for their rights. They use water that way as well. And so there's so many parallel situations going on all over the world as it relates to water in one way or another. And we all need water to survive. It's just very interesting to me. So I want to talk to the younger folks who are here. So Katie and Tasha, I'm wondering, were you the youngest in the delegation, or were there younger people? And as young people, what can you say to encourage adults, older adults, to get involved, really, with this kind of work?
We were among the youngest. There were four students. Tasha was probably, like, the second youngest, and there was one other younger person, but we were all in the, like, 20 to 23 age range.
Okay.
So that was definitely the youngest group of people there.
Let me ask you this. Were you able to interact with younger people in the Honduras? And if that happened, what was that experience like for you?
To some extent, and it's actually really cool you're asking me this question, because I was so inspired by the youth movement and, like, the youth that we saw involved in these organizations that we visited with, that I'm actually coordinating my own delegation around that theme.
Oh,
so
that's really good.
It's really cool. It's really cool to see. We saw a couple of university students that were part of the larger university movement that's going on in Honduras right now. And it's a really big scale thing that's happening, and it's really cool to watch this play out right before we're going next summer. So it'll be really cool to see that timeline progress. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was really inspiring how aware these younger people that we met with were of the struggle and what was going on and how embedded in their lives it was. And it was almost like it was really eye-opening, because here I feel like activism is kind of this almost like hobby for some people, or this thing that they do aside from what they're doing, you know, their main direction in life. And it felt like for me there, seeing these youth like have activism be almost like the forefront of what they do was so inspiring and so cool to watch. Mm-hmm. And just so different from how I feel like sometimes even my circle of peers and people think about activism. So mm-hmm. that was my experience with it. But
how about you, Tasha?
Yeah, I mean, very similar. Seeing how involved the kids around our age were. Unfortunately for us, we didn't speak very much Spanish, if at all. So that was definitely a struggle. But we had translators. We had really amazing translators. And thanks to them, we were able to communicate. And it was really amazing, wow, amazing, to see these kids, students, I want to say, literally fighting for their lives. Because, you know, for them, it's not this thing that you do to, you know, once school is over, even during school, or I mean, their activism, it wasn't something that they were, like, applauded for by, you know, by their government. It's not something that they're supposed to do. And so to see them doing that despite that, it's like, wow, you know, really puts our own activism into perspective, being back here and, you know, just having the privilege to just be able to be active in our activism without having to fear for our lives mm-hmm. or our family's lives. You know, they're fighting for their future, their, you know, potential children's future, and so are we, but mm-hmm. it's on a whole different level, and it's powerful.
That sounds very powerful. It also sounds as though, and I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier, that there's some fear for their safety mm-hmm. Because of their activism. Mm-hmm. Did they talk to you about any of those direct struggles that they are experiencing in the Honduras for the work they're doing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they are being criminalized. They're going to trial for it. Actually, not one of the students we were able to talk to, but one of the students who is on trial in this emblematic case that's going on right now, his father was just killed. And I mean, that they do talk about that. They talk about their fear for their lives, but how important it is they put their lives on the line, because it's not just about them. It's about, and that was a huge thing that ran through all these organizations and everybody we talked to is, they're not fighting for themselves or for that group. They're fighting for a bigger thing, and that's for everybody and for everything. I mean, people fighting for water rights are fighting for water rights across the globe. It's not just for their communities. And mm-hmm. that was huge and really cool for me to see that, or for us to see that. I think that solidarity piece was everywhere, despite their fear, despite, you know, the struggles and obstacles they might face along the way. Like, that was super huge and super prominent in everybody we talked to.
Oh, wow, that's yeah. great. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to point out that a kind of a specific point they often said was that they really couldn't dwell on the fear. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something they really couldn't, because if they did, you know, they wouldn't be able to be active. They would be too scared, you know, for their lives. And they really just focused on fighting for what could be ahead, what was in the future. And that was, you know, mm-hmm. wow, again, powerful, because being, you know, in this country, fear is like what keeps you from doing anything. So mm-hmm. that was, yeah.
I think that lines up with what you just said, lines up with the civil rights movement very well mm-hmm. in this country, because back in the 60s, you couldn't be fearful. You know, this was something that Dr. King and others were working for, they couldn't be fearful, because if they were fearful, they couldn't get the work done for the people. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the same thing. Carol, you were going to say something?
I don't know how many people listening are familiar with the case of Berta Cáceres. Some of you probably are. But she was an activist who was murdered last year for her work fighting the hydroelectric companies for the Lenca community. And her group was one of the groups that we met with, and we met her daughter, Bertita Soniega Cáceres, who has recently been chosen as the new general coordinator for the same group that her mother was killed fighting for.
Right.
And so the fact that she's willing to continue to put herself out like that and carry on the struggle, she's 26 years old, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. she is taking this lead role in continuing the fight that her mother was killed for. Mm-hmm. And so that is amazing to see, and being able to meet with that group and hear about their struggles, meeting with her, meeting with an older woman who was a Lenca elder, who was telling us about the long-term struggle of the people, listening to one of the young men tell us how this is not a new struggle, it's been going on for 524 years since the Spanish arrived. And they see the history of it, they see the connections of it, they see the connections between what they do and what movements are happening in other places.
Mm-hmm.
They see the connections between past and present, between movements within the country. And it's amazing to see how that intersectionality of issues is happening across these movements. One of the groups that we were with is called the Movimiento Amplio por la Dignidad y la Justicia, the wide movement for dignity and justice. And one of their biggest roles is coordinating all of these different groups and reaching out to different groups to help them to coordinate their efforts.
Mm-hmm. I believe Berta was here in Duluth. I think she's visited this country. I think she was here in Duluth not too long ago before she was assassinated. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of her having been here, but I've only lived here for 3 years. I know people in our delegation had met her on previous delegations.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that she had been here.
I don't think.
And we have had.
I'm not sure.
It's possible, I'm sure.
I thought I interviewed her. If I'm not mistaken, I thought I had interviewed her. I'm going to check that out and see if we actually had an opportunity to interview her a few years ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
She won the Goldman Environmental Prize and got a lot of world attention for that, which is part of what put her in the gun sights.
Her photos are all over in Honduras. Her pictures are on all the every, you know, bridge and building in Honduras.
Sure.
I mean, they scream like it's like something. Like, they didn't kill Berta, they just made 1,000 more. Because her spirit is just so alive, and her passion for the struggle is just so alive and prevalent in everybody's, you know, thoughts and spirit. It's just so beautiful. She's actually the reason Tasha and I wanted to get involved. Lynn, the coordinator of
Lynn Clark Pegg?
Yep, Lynn Clark Pegg, the coordinator, came and spoke in a class of ours, showed us pictures of Berta, and then our class, which was a feminism across borders kind of class, is like transnational feminism or something. We had a main focus of Berta for our content, so she was just so inspiring. And after her assassination, I think Tasha and I it felt really urgent, and we just wanted to be there and see what it was that inspired her to do the work that she did. And we just wanted to see the country, and I'm so glad that we did it.
Yeah.
Oh, that is really great.
Yeah.
That's very inspiring, coming from younger folks who, for all intents and purposes, don't get the credit for doing this work because there's, you know, young people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're just young people. They're not really doing anything. Well, that's not necessarily true. Yeah, and so you're making a difference by being here, but also by going to these countries and working with people and learning about their struggles and doing something with them and for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's vitally important. It'll stay with you for the rest of your life. the delegation itself, who were some of the people that were part of your delegation? I don't know how large it was, but can you talk a little bit about the delegation itself? I know Lynn Clark Pegg was a part of it, and Megan Krausch, who's a professor at the University of Wisconsin in Superior, yourselves. Who were some of the other people that were involved in the delegation?
Like I said, there were a couple other students, one of which goes to UWS and the other one is from Kansas. We had a journalist on our crew with us, a lawyer, a couple of other professors from the West Coast.
People that had participated in the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
Quite a few people.
So a cross-section of people then involved in this.
Oh, yeah. I think our age range was 20 to like 85.
20
was,
to 85. Yeah. That is really
It was a really cool experience being able to share that with such a wide variety of people and generations. Mm-hmm. So,
Carol, you're going to say something, I think.
Oh, just that being a professor who works with college-age students all the time, I see a full range of college students, but the people that were in our group I found really inspiring and gave me a lot of hope for the future. Honestly, seeing young people who care enough about to be doing this kind of work is just really inspiring to me. So, sometimes you get that in the classroom, but a lot of times you don't. And so being able to be out there and traveling with them and having that age range from the young people who are experiencing certain things for the first time to older people who have traveled a lot and have a lot of life experience to share. And the age range of the group was wonderful.
Oh, I love the generational pieces that were involved in your delegation. I think that's really, again, very inspiring, very much so. So I know there's an event coming up on the 11th. Is that correct?
August 11th, yes.
August 11th. Would you like to take some time to talk about that event and tell our listeners what it's all about and what you're hoping to get out of that?
We're having a fundraiser for Witness for Peace Friday, August 11th at the Gumaji Building from 6 to 9. And it's actually a cakewalk. So if anyone's familiar with what a cakewalk is, Katie can maybe explicate a little bit on that because she knows what it is, but I'm decorating the cakes for it, and we're planning on raffling off some really pretty cakes, other experienced bakers and from the community and other businesses are donating cakes as well, other goodies, and some of that stuff is being given away during the cakewalk, other stuff is getting raffled off, so we're going to have an array of really yummy things that I think people will be interested in, so
Katie, explain the cakewalk, please. Go ahead.
I think a more accurate phrase is cake raffle, but like cakewalk came from, like, we're going to have some games for kids there, and those are traditionally called cakewalks. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we're just going to be having raffle tickets, so everybody kind of has a fair chance at some of the prizes. We're going to have kids games. There is going to be like a couple of silent auctions outside of cakes and like other baked goods that you can win. We're going to have Duluth Kitchen Company donated like a basket of like cake related items that you can take home with you. And then Amazing Grace Bakery and Cafe donated a $25 gift card. There's going to be a taco bar donated by Duluth Grill. Like, we just have so much fun things going on. And then on top of that, we're making posters of all the organizations that we visited in Honduras. And we're going to have just an opportunity for people to come learn about the organization, learn about future delegations like me and Tasha's next year. And Carol, I think, is doing one too. There's just going to be such an opportunity to learn about what we learned about and how you can get involved with this organization or outside of it as well. So it's a really fun thing. We've had a lot of fun planning it and getting everything together. It's been a long process, but we're really excited to see it all come together.
Has Lynn Clark Pegg been a part of the planning?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know it's going to be really good then, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be really great if Lynn is involved with it.
Yeah, so. It is free to attend, too. It just the ticket raffle tickets, if you're interested in buying something or something like that, that's what you can pay for. But
Sure. Kel?
Your head's welcome.
We should also mention the support we've gotten from ACO. We're using the space there at DiMaggi, Dr. Robert Palace Cultural Center is actually where it's going to be held, newly named.
Sure.
And they have also donated an artwork that's going to be auctioned. And so they've been very supportive, and we're excited for the collaboration with them as well.
Yeah, very generous organization in the community.
Absolutely. Great.
So this international work that you're doing, okay, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's very international. It's very important. But I want you to really speak to, the two of you especially, to speak to young people who may be listening to the show. Talk to them a bit about why you believe, starting with you, Katie, why you believe it's important for young people to now get involved not only in the work in the United States, but global work, why that's so important.
Well, I particularly think it's important to be in any situation. If you're going to be involved in social justice, you have to put yourself in an uncomfortable position sometimes. And traveling internationally, like going somewhere where you don't know the language, where people don't look like you when you're walking down the street, like there's nothing more uncomfortable than that. But it was such a transformational thing. It was so amazing to go there, be uncomfortable, see all these differences, you know, maybe physically or whatever, and then still be able to connect with that, you know, like be able to connect with the passion and with the will to fight and to want to make a difference. That's so powerful. And the other thing I think is you can travel anywhere in the world and see these things going on. And even if you're not going to, like, keep pursuing, like, an international activist, you know, mindset, you can take those things back home and start changing things locally. And that's so important. And like I said before, that was one of the most, like, prevalent things that we heard across the board there is, like, go home and fight what you need to fight there, because it all, like, circles back. And it's this huge circle of life that we all just need to be a part of. And It was the absolute like most beautiful experience. And I think anybody, if you have the opportunity to go and travel and to see these things, not even like necessarily do much, but just to see and to witness and to hear and listen, do it. Like absolutely no hesitation, do it, because it is the most like life-changing thing.
Absolutely. Tasha, that was beautiful. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I really like that Katie said that they were very, you know, pertinent on us going home and changing what we can here. And, you know, our whole idea of going there was to, you know, try to help them as much as we can. You know, the whole basis is solidarity. But we still wanted to do what we could. But they're like, no, go home and do what you can there. And I think that really, really was a transformation for me, because I kind of went there with this idea that the Honduran people like needed our help, you know, and which just comes from such a place of privilege for me to think that, and for them to say, no, you know, we do need your help, but you need to do your own thing. Where from where you're from, there's people struggling there, and you need to fix that first, kind of, and that was really, you know, kind of crazy. For them to be so like humble about their situation and want us to like help ourselves, that was really emotional too. But I'm really glad you pointed that out. And yeah, in terms of students being active, it really starts with us, you know, especially right now and what our country is going through, what it, you know, will continue to go through. If we don't do anything, no one's gonna do anything. And you know, we're coming of an age where, you know, we might potentially have children or people looking up to us, that we need to teach how to be active, or it's just going to dwindle away. And that fire and that drive for wanting a change really does start with us. And we're much more aware of that now, too, after we went to Honduras. And that's what we're trying to help other students understand, other young people. It's really up to us to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
The other thing about international travel, and it kind of goes in the piece that I said about uncomfortability, is when you're here, when we're here, I think a lot of people don't understand, especially a lot of maybe young white students, people, there are so many systems in place to keep us unquestioning of our government and what our government is doing and like what all these other things are doing. There's so many things that want us to not think about that. And when you go internationally and you're hearing perspectives from people outside of the United States, some of those things start to crumble. Some of those ideologies that we've been taught, you know, to keep us unquestioning start to crumble. And it really is such an eye-opening experience because it allows you to be a little bit more critical of your government and the things going on and to start having a more individual like mindset where you can kind of think for yourself instead of thinking in a way that you've been taught to think. And that was also a big piece that I took from this, is that I really need to be a little bit more on top of some of the things that are happening internationally because they matter. And it's, you know, like it's some of the policies and things that we're doing here are affecting people that I will never talk to in my life. But that's so important because it's affecting them negatively. And I just think that piece is important, too. You need to step outside of some of these systems that have been built to kind of keep you quiet, because you should be questioning and you should be critical and you should be, you know, analyzing these things.
So I'm here today with Katie Marks, Tasha Tard, and Carol Wallace. They're here on People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're having a wonderful conversation about their recent trip to the Honduras. These young folks are really bright folks. Okay, they're really bright, and they have a lot to say, and they're making tremendous differences across the country, across the world, internationally, locally. And they're from this area. And so we should be very proud of Tasha and Katie and Carol for the work that you all are doing, so vitally important. I want to ask you, though, would it be safe to say that we are more alike in this world than we are different? If we really look at the global perspective, we're more alike than we are different. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, and I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but being there and witnessing people fighting for basic human rights, truly, you know, shelter, food, water, and realizing that we all need this to live, you know. We're all so similar. We all need, like, the same, like, basic human needs. And everything else is kind of just, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Going to a country, living in poverty, and seeing that, and, like, looking at myself and, like, everything that I have and everything I think I need, and realizing that I really don't need all that. And I think that was, you know, especially apparent to me when I got there, because I am young, one of the younger ones, and hearing them talk about what they think is important to them, and me realizing that, you know, that's important to me too. Yeah.
So it really touched you, didn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I can tell. So Carol, did you want to say anything about that?
Well, I was thinking about what Katie and Tasha were saying about need to bring the struggle back home.
Yes.
At one point, I was kind of struggling with, well, isn't that just another way of being selfish and saying it's all about me? And one of the moments that really convinced me, no, that is the way to go, move out of this, was an interaction I had with one of the young men at Copin, Beth Cáceres organization. They had invited us to light candles on the altar that they have for her. And I had brought some pebbles from Brighton Beach with me, thinking they could be a nice little token gift to give to somebody down there as a symbol of where we came from. And so I offered him one of these pebbles to put on the altar and told him that it came from a place that has 10% of the fresh water of the world, and that there are people here who are very aware of the need to protect that water. And as we were talking about that, he clearly was being very moved by that, and he took this pebble and he placed it right next to her picture under the arm of a doll that represents the goddess protector of the seas. Wow. And so that was one of the most profound moments that I had during the whole time. And so, and it really reminded me that, yes, this is about all being part of the common struggle. It's not just about how can we help Honduras. It's about being inspired by to all of us fight in our own little corner of the world wherever we can.
Mm-hmm. That's very good. That's very powerful. Is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners before I ask you once again to tell our listeners about the event coming up on Friday? Some of the things, again, that you're going to be doing, and, you know, the fundraising aspects of that, and if it's open to the public. So if you want to share one more thing with our listeners from your trip to the Honduras, you can certainly do that. That you may have forgotten or just want to share. Katie?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, too, just last about the trip, is how affected Honduras is by U.S. policy, mm-hmm. and how I think that also played a role in why they wanted us to come here and, you know, work for our own struggles and fight the fight here. So, yeah, and that was also something that I really wish I would have done a little bit more research on before I went there, was how truly affected they are by U.S. policy, and how really and really important it is for us as U.S. citizens to be more aware of how our policies affect other countries, because they really do. And it's important for us to also fight those struggles. But like we said earlier, fight our own struggles here, because they ultimately affect many other countries, especially Central American countries. So,
well, thank you for sharing that, Tasha. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say something about the value of an organization like Witness for Peace. I think in a lot of mindsets, we tend to value more what we like to think of active work than passive work. And I think Witness for Peace, even though it is incredibly active to me, a lot of people might think of it as passive, because it's not like people go to these countries and do something like build a well or build like a physical thing. But there is a really solid importance in building solidarity and in listening and in experiencing and witnessing, like Witness for Peace does. And so I just wanted to say, and I had touched a little bit before, but it's really important that we involve ourselves in organizations like Witness for Peace, if you can and are able to, because, I mean, our IT guys that are down there, the international team members that are in Honduras, Ryan and Brian, I mean, they say us going there and listening and giving, you know, these organizations and these communities a chance to tell their stories in a way that they're being heard inspires them incredibly and is like a really important thing for them to do as well as us. So I just think it's really important that people understand that there's value in just listening and in just experiencing and giving people a platform to talk about their truths and what they need as a community and as an oppressed group. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say that.
You said it very beautifully, Katie. So, yeah. Very beautifully.
Good.
Carol?
I guess one last thing I wanted to mention was that there is a bill in Congress called the Berta Cáceres Human Rights in Honduras Act, and it's been sponsored by a number of people, including our local Congressman Rick Nolan, and I don't know how much chance it has to get through, but I think the more support we can get, it's really important. It's related to looking at the ways U.S. funding is being used to support militarization and in Honduras, the ways in which the money that's going to fight the so-called drug war is being used in Honduras to foment a lot of the violence and the oppression that's happening there. Mm-hmm. And so the bill was written in cooperation with people in Honduras, identifying the things that they need to see happen from the United States. And so I would really encourage people to look that up and throw their support. It's called the Berta Cáceres Human Rights in Honduras Act, and H.R. 1299, I think. But I'm
sure. Okay. And certainly look that up, folks, yeah. And get involved and contacting the congressperson in your district to get them involved as well to support this. One last time about the event coming up tomorrow. At the Gamaji building. Mm-hmm. Would you share that?
Yeah, so tomorrow, August 11th, from 6 to 9, we will be having a cakewalk/cake raffle where we will be raffling off some beautifully made cakes from people throughout the community, including Tasha, as well as things like gift baskets from Duluth Kitchen Company and some gift cards and gift certificates to different bakeries and bakers, community bakers. And there will be a kids game, so bring the family down. We're going to have plenty of things for kids to do and be preoccupied with. And then a taco bar donated by Duluth Grill. Refreshments, you know, the whole thing. And then you'll have a chance to also learn about who we are as an organization, our trip specifically, and then there will be other people who have taken delegations with Witness for Peace too, so you can learn about those, and then future delegations coming up like Tasha's and I's. So
very good. Anything else?
The name of the event is Sweet Justice.
Thank you. Sweet Justice. And I'm just going to put Lynn's number out there.
Yes.
If people want to contact her for more information about the event, it's 218-348-3048. That's 218-348-3048. I want to take this time to thank Katie Marks, Tasha Tart, and Carol Wallace for this inspiring conversation about their recent trip to the Honduras. They're very active with Witness for Peace Midwest, and we thank you for your work, and we appreciate everything that you do. This is People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a great evening and a great weekend.